You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
When I look around my campus, I see the faces of the women affected by this lack of contraceptive coverage.
If she's really concerned about the rights of privacy, she should keep her private sexual business to herself and pay for it herself.
Have we become a country where it's okay to go to church on Sunday morning for 1 hour, but let's not actually express those beliefs the rest of the week?
If you really hold to sola scriptura, you're going to hold to solus Christus, meaning all theology is Christology.
Organists in Indiana love Issues Etc.
You know, I wish newspapers did this a little more often. They don't. They often hide their retractions. They often hide their corrections, their amendations to their stories way deep inside the newspaper so as not to be caught with their hand in the cookie jar. Not so here at Issues Etc. Always, whenever we have an admission to make, it's always the best thing to do is simply admit it right up front. And I have to admit something right up front on this Friday afternoon, March the 9th. I had doubted Craig's encyclopedic knowledge of the NFL and football and of Peyton Manning and the Colts in particular. Craig had been telling us now for some weeks that Peyton Manning did not have a future with the Colts. He was rock solid sure of it. He knew it as well as he knew his own mother. And I scoffed. I have to admit, I scoffed. I scoffed because, well, you know, Craig knows things so certainly sometimes it's easy just to doubt that he knows them. But he knew it. He stuck with it. He did not back down. And lo and behold, and I have to admit this up front here on this Friday afternoon, Craig was right. He was absolutely right. Our director of business operations is not only a guru of business, but he knows the NFL. He knows Peyton Manning, and he knows the mind of the Colts organization so well that he could make that prediction and stand by it, and it came true. Now, I won't go so far as to say it came true because Craig predicted it. I don't think he's a prophet, but I will bow to his superior knowledge, as always, in all things, especially with regard to the future of Peyton Manning. He will not tell me, by the way, where Peyton's going next. He knows, but he will not reveal it to me. So I'll just have to wait and see. And when the decision is made, he'll tell us he knew it all along. It's Friday afternoon, March the 9th, here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We have our usual fare for Friday, beginning with our admissions and our confessions and our mea culpas. And Craig, we'll just simply have to bask in the light of that for the next couple hours. We've got listener email, Issues Etc. comment line, Issues Etc. blog of the week. Then in the second hour of the program, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us from GetReligion.org. We'll talk about media coverage of Harold Camping's confession. He had an admission to make as well. You might not have heard about it because it wasn't covered nearly as much as his predictions of the end of the world. We'll also talk about media coverage of the HHS contraception mandate. She's found a few interesting things there. Pastor Anthony Voltatorini, we finally got his name right. We've referenced him in Blog of the Week, I think, before, butchered his name. Now I think we can actually say it with a clear conscience. He's going to join us to talk about crucifixes in the second hour of the program. And then, as usual, Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesetc.org, our Twitter address at issuesetc, or vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can listen at our website, issuesetc.org, and there are several ways to vote there. You can also go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc.
I hesitate to do this because Craig always wants to turn this into some kind of sports talk show, but you failed to mention Craig's thoughts on bounties put out by the Rams' new defensive coordinator, used to be with the New Orleans Saints. His take on that issue as well.
I would classify his position positively amoral. Craig somehow believes that once you step on the gridiron, no, you've left the moral universe and now you can do as you please. You can pay to have someone injured. I told him this morning, if Tony Soprano put out a hit on a guy and say, go break that guy's legs and I'll give you $1,500, it's a crime. But somehow, if a coach on the Rams staff says the Saints, well, actually, he's with the Saints. There's no connection, tangible connection to the Rams yet. But with the Saints, if he said the same thing to one of his players, go out there and hurt that guy. I want to see him in a neck brace when you're done with him, and I'll give you $1,500. Craig says, no crime. No crime whatsoever. He says, that's just football. So I trust his sense when it comes to the X's and the O's, but when it comes to the moral universe, I still would rather go with my conscience rather than Craig. I don't know what it is. It's like there's no Ten Commandments, or I think, was it you yesterday that said that that Craig believes that somehow in the NFL there's no original sin. You know, there's nothing wrong with this. They're just out there having a good time. Yeah, the guy is paralyzed for life. And somebody got paid to do it, but, you know, come on. It's the NFL. They knew what they were signing up for. I say that if a coach has to pay a guy to play that hard, he's not a very good coach.
Or he should ask for some money back on the guy's salary. He's not given 110.
Absolutely.
Well, Craig just said that's right. Am I noticing a change in Lord Feichtinger's position on bounty? Was it bounty? What are they calling it? Bounty hunts? Bounty?
No,
hits?
They're calling it Bounty Gate.
Bounty Gate.
Yeah.
Okay. Bounty Gate.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that I told him this morning. Craig played football for Collinsville High School locally here. Okay. Collinsville, great basketball tradition. Football, new tradition. Okay. So I told Craig, I was like, perhaps your coach should have tried some bounty hits and maybe you would have won a few more games when you played for the purple and white here in Collinsville.
And Jeff, you have actually worked with Dick Vitale, haven't you?
Yes.
In your past.
Yes.
And he was on the radio locally here just railing on this bounty gate thing. He was saying that the coach in question should be banned from coaching in the NFL for the rest of his mortal life. And Craig, for some reason, doesn't believe that Vitale is qualified to speak on matters unless the ball is round, okay? And I said, well, Craig, you opine all the time on all sorts of matters. Like
Bilderbergers.
Hockey. CFR. I've never seen Craig play professional hockey or coach it or even do a radio show on professional hockey, but we hear from him all the time.
That's a great point. Well, I'd love to see Craig on ice skates. Huh? He'd make a good defenseman.
I bet you he is. I bet you he is light on his feet.
Let me tell you, I've tried ice skating once, and
try it again.
I just have to say that it is not a pretty sight.
Well, you will try it again because you have a girlfriend, and that means your destiny. You are on a collision course with another chance to ice skate. Sooner or later, you go to New York. You get out there in front of Rockefeller Center. She says, come on, Craig. It's so romantic.
No.
The evening lights of the city, and there you are, Craig. You're spinning out on the ice like.
Until Tori, okay, I had avoided ice skating my whole life, right? I believe it was last January. There was a birthday party, and she wanted to go ice skating. So we all went to the Steinberg Rink. So we go to Steinberg. Oh, great facility, by the way. Tons of people out there. It's a lot of fun until, you know, I get out there and skate around and
somebody gets hurt.
Right. Yeah. I tore my glove. I mean, I about fell 7 or 18 times. And
yet he feels qualified.
Skates didn't fit right.
To speak on professional hockey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but no, skating, no fun whatsoever.
I think that skating and hockey kind of go together.
No, for me they don't. No, and I'm the kind of guy that does my skating on the couch watching it on TV. So there you go.
on the Xbox, on the Kinect, along with the Zumba that Craig does every night. All right,
Craig was talking about, you know, doing things he said he'd never do.
He's got a list.
Yeah, my friend, that's just the tip of the iceberg, my friend. And
never say never.
And pity the ice that you skate upon. pity the ice.
I could see Craig driving the Zamboni, though.
Oh, and then Craig on this Peyton Manning thing, he acts like he's the only guy that predicted that the Colts wouldn't re-sign Peyton Manning. Almost every sports talk thing I said there's no way he's going to pay him $28 million. But Lord Feichninger lives in his own universe or something, and he acts like he's the first and only guy to say that they wouldn't give him this extra money to play for the Colts. But hey. Good job, Craig.
We
you
love
got that
him.
One right.
We love him.
We love you. We love
we
you.
We really do.
Ice skates and all, Dorothy Fleming. Here's an email from Cooper. I found Dr. Morse's polemic against Sandra Fluke distasteful. Nothing is gained by arbitrarily rejecting Ms. Fluke's argument and substituting a straw man in its stead. The basis for this dismissal was the emotional appeals Ms. Fluke used to bolster her claim. And yet her most compelling claim was in regard to a lesbian friend who suffers from polycystic ovarian syndrome and consequently lost an ovary and quite likely her chance to reproduce at all because she was unable to pay the $100 per month for her hormonal medication. This example addresses a wrong in need of righting and is clearly an ethical appeal. And even ignoring that personal experience is a legitimate part of a logical argument. But Dr. Morse was not satisfied to simply reject Ms. Fluke's rhetoric. She found it necessary to besmirch her character as well. Dr. Morse is too clever to use the crass invective terms employed by Rush Limbaugh, but the meaning of sexual anarchy is clear and far from flattering. What I do not understand is why she claims that sexual anarchists such as Ms. Fluke seek out sterile, emotionless sex, but apparently use impassioned emotional appeals to comprise their arguments. So which is it? I do not begrudge those of you at Issues Etc. for trying to advance your deeply held position on religious liberty, but it has been observed that the participants from both sides on this issue are talking past each other, and I concur. Perhaps a more compelling and fruitful discussion on this topic might involve mutual respect and the pursuit of common ground with your opponents. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the email, Cooper.
I'll respond on the other side of the break. I actually find the term sexual anarchist accurate. And I know it could be misunderstood. I actually asked Jennifer about for an explanation of it, and I think her explanation actually held water. I'll try and remember that during the break, and then when we come back, I'll respond to Cooper's email. I'm going home. My baby just took me
a little. The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Ministry happens at church. This is a radio outreach. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
the teaching of the church is that you should be barrier-free and drug-free and have natural sex. That's the teaching of the church. No, no natural sex, no organic sex, whether you like it or not. And even if you don't like it, you got to pay for us to do it our way.
Well, that's not how God thinks, because the one, the individual one, is so important. He would have done everything that he did if it had only been you.
I notice there's constant reference to unprecedented, unprecedented, unprecedented. This is unprecedented, that's unprecedented. Hey, listen, if every idea you have is unprecedented, you're probably wrong.
It's also important to reconnect with the Christian consensus. For 1,800 years, all Christians believed that birth control was a sin.
A little taste of what's to come in the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, March the 9th. Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can listen to all those soundbites in their entirety at our website, issuesetc.org. You can vote there as well, or at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Or you can wait until we play live and then give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. I promised to respond to Cooper's email. I don't know if I can respond to every issue raised there, but let me respond to a couple that I had the time to write down when I was listening. He talked about sexual anarchist being kind of a code word for some of the really derogatory and I think inflammatory, unnecessarily degrading things that Rush Limbaugh had to say about what's the last name? Is it
Sandra Fluke?
Sandra Fluke. So, and I think I know Jennifer well enough as a person and as a and as a guest, to say with high degree of certainty that she was not trying to imply anything Rush Limbaugh-esque in that statement. She was actually trying to make an – I asked her about it. I said, what do you mean by sexual anarchy? And she said, well, I don't know what else to call it. If someone believes that they should not be held accountable to any authority whatsoever with regard to their sexual behavior, that no rules should apply, that they should do completely as they see fit, what other word applies than anarchy? And I just looked it up during the break just to make sure that I wasn't, you know, misinterpreting the word. The word means a state of disorder due to the absence or non-recognition of authority. And the secondary meaning there is an absence of government and absolute freedom of the individual regarded as a political ideal. I do not think she meant to imply what Limbaugh said openly, which was promiscuity, but that in the cold light of day, the sexual revolution advocates for sexual anarchy. Not necessarily promiscuity, but anarchy. No rules, no authority, and nothing governing your behavior. Not just government, but nothing, absolutely nothing governing your behavior. And I agree with her. I do not know what else to call that viewpoint. I will do what I want to do, and no one can tell me not to do it. I don't know what to call that other than anarchy. There has to be some system of authority, be it moral or civil or governmental, at work in all of our lives so that we can live together in peace and harmony and relative ease. And to say there are no rules in this area of our behavior is to advocate, at least in that area, for anarchy. So I think it's a rather accurate way of describing the viewpoint that is either wittingly or unwittingly being expressed by the sexual revolution, not by Mrs. Fluke herself, not by Miss Fluke herself, because she didn't say anything about it. She didn't stand up there and say, "Let me have all the sex I want to." She didn't, and it's a misrepresentation to say that she did. Now, as to the issue of other uses for chemical birth control in the case of the – and I thought it was a compelling case, which Jennifer did not address in our conversation. And that's probably my fault. I should have raised the issue of what about the lesbian friend of Mrs. Fluke who needed this birth control for reasons other than preventing a pregnancy. She needed them, and I'm fully aware of the medical use of birth control to it's a hormonal regulation to keep these ovarian cysts in check. I'm fully aware of this, by the way. I think that was the best argument she did make, and I, as host, probably should have raised that with Jennifer to see what she had to say. So I'll take the blame for that particular omission. Now, does she need to be paying $100 a month? That's what she claimed, $100 a month that she couldn't afford for this. I think that the research has indicated that the birth control pill is much cheaper than that. It may not be from every prescription you go or wherever you go, but it can be had much cheaper than $100 a month. So that might have been a little bit of an exaggeration there on the part of Ms. Fluke. Here's the basic critique that Jennifer laid out, and that was, and you'll hear it, I think, a bit in our soundbite for the week, because we chose her in part of that conversation. Basically says, if you're going to advocate for freedom and for choice and for the privacy of your own behavior, then why are you asking me to pay for something that you say should be private? You want your sexual behavior to be your own business and your own private affair. Then why are you asking everyone else to pay for your own business and your own private affair? Because everyone will pay. To some degree, everyone will pay under the HHS mandate.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. This is Will from Mount Clemens, Michigan. I'm calling to comment on your segment from Tuesday, March 6th on the firing of a gay teacher from a Catholic school. Those who want to change the teachings of the church know something better than many within the church. If you want to change the belief system, you start with changing practice. If you change church practices, beliefs will soon follow. Those who want to change the church teaching on homosexuality will tell the church that they can have their beliefs, but they cannot practice those beliefs in public. Practice will always change beliefs or also doctrine. Thanks again for all that you do. Bye.
As I've said many times, smartest listeners in radio, and it's quite true, you can try and change people's beliefs directly. It can be done. It's been done many times. And sadly, Christians have proven themselves more than willing to compromise their beliefs directly. But a more surreptitious and often effective way to get people to change their beliefs, and you're quite right, is to simply change practice. The two are always connected in the church. What one believes and what does are connected, and what one does and what one believes are connected. So this is why the church is always concerned about doctrine and practice. And we've seen it in the worship wars. How has the worship war been fought from the side that wants to see the historic liturgy thrown out onto the garbage heap of history? Has it been practiced? I mean, how has it been instigated? What has been the front line? Change the practice first, and then the change in beliefs will follow. And they do. And it's a coercive change of practice. Now, whether it's people trying to chuck the liturgy in the church and they say, let's change the practice, and pretty soon people will no longer believe they need anything the historic worship of life of the church offers, and they're successful. Or, in this case, the Health and Human Services saying that the church cannot practice their beliefs in public. That is, as employers and insurers, they cannot refuse to do something that they find morally objectionable. I think the strategy is the same. If they're forced to do that, pretty soon the belief will change as well. The belief will fall. Thank you very much. It's a great comment. By the way, the Issues Etc. comment line is open for anyone who wants to leave a comment. 618-223-8382. 618-223-8382. 24 hours a day. Questions, comments, criticism, we welcome it all.
Matt's email comes in light in the aftermath of your conversation with Terry Mattingly on the faith of U2's lead singer Bono. He says, do you really think someone as successful and famous as Bono would hold to historic Christian doctrine as it's so incredibly unpopular to do? He'd be ridiculed and wouldn't be allowed to do that. I'm sure at one time as a teen, Bono probably did believe and confess historic Christian doctrine, but come on, think about it. We only see him promoting a social gospel, not a biblical Christian gospel. Thanks for the email, Matt.
Well, that's what we see. We do not know what the man believes unless we hear it from himself. So I'm going to err on the side of saying he says he's a Christian. Do I disagree with some of his political aims? Yes. The one place where I have some serious qualms about what some of the things that Bono has promoted as a Christian is the pluralism that he seems to have accepted. That is, that all religions are, I don't know if he's saying that all religions ought to work together for peace and harmony in the world, or whether, because he likes the coexist kind of a thing, or whether he's saying that all religions have the same God, the same theology, the same goals, which would be genuine pluralism. It's one thing to say, look, can't we all get along regardless of our religious beliefs, which is what it sounds like he's saying, as opposed to someone who says, well, our differences, our theological differences don't mean anything. I haven't heard Bono say anything like that. I will err on the side of saying, if he says he's a Christian, until he gives me reason to doubt that. Look, fame and fortune is no reason to doubt someone's Christian faith. Is it difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven? Absolutely. I think someone once said that. Nearly impossible, but with God, all things are possible. I think he also said that too. So Bono seems, at least from his testimony before the world, to want to be known as a Christian. He's not going to sit there and write theological treatises, so it's hard. It's difficult, apart from someone actually sitting down and asking him theological questions, what it is he actually believes. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And I just would not discount his Christian faith out of hand simply because he's popular, simply because he's wealthy, simply because he's famous. Does he believe Orthodox Christianity? Well, he says he's a Christian. He's a rich man. He's a superstar. Does that mean he can't be a Christian? Not at all. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. That it just wasn't real. But that's not the way it feels. Operator,
oh, could you help me place this? You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
If any former evangelicals are hearing me speak right now, I want to assure you, you don't have to be a homeless Christian. If you would go to issuesetc.org, look on their website, you'll find a list of churches. Find one close to you and attend that church. There, you can receive the true gospel, you don't have to be a homeless Christian, and they will not call you a backslider.
To find a church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church.
Sophisticated Lutheran apologetics. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
So-called pro-choice politicians in Wisconsin should get an award for hypocrisy. These members of the state legislature recently blocked a vote on a bill to protect women from coerced abortions. The bill also prevented abortionists from prescribing the abortion pill RU46 by a computer screen like Skype. It wouldn't prohibit getting the drug, it just makes it more safe for women who take it. Even though pro-abortion politicians claim to be pro-woman, their true agenda was revealed in Wisconsin. They're not pro-choice. They're pro-abortion, and they reject any common-sense guidelines, even those designed to protect women. It's time to expose pro-abortion activists and the abortion industry they represent. It's all about the money abortion generates for those selling death.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Friday afternoon. We're coming to you live on this March the 9th. Listener email on the Issues Etc. comment line in a few minutes. Issues Etc. blog of the week in the second hour. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll talk about HHS contraception coverage. We'll talk about coverage of Harold Camping's apology slash confession of sin after his failed predictions of the end of the world last year. And then we'll talk about the display of crucifixes with Pastor Anthony Voltatorni and Issues Etc. soundbite of the week.
This comes from Cynthia. She says, I'm serving on the worship and music committee at a Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod congregation. We left the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America in October 2009. We have recently formed a task force to explore using some contemporary. A friend and I who chair the committee do not like this word and have had bad experiences with another church, music and liturgy in our worship services. What do you say to your pastor and choir director who believe now that we have to do this in order to reach young people and young families? My friend and I do not believe this, but we are an older congregation and want young families to come to our church. Thank you for your criteria for discerning praise songs. I'm sure it will be helpful. Our pastor is very concerned about being doctrinally sound in our music as well as the rest of the service, but we are feeling that we are the bad guys on this issue. Any help you can give us will be greatly appreciated. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening, Cynthia.
Well, I'll just tell you as a matter of fact that this is usually the way that I'm not impugning the motives of your pastor, your choir director. They may have been sold a bill of goods by someone else saying, look, if you want your church to grow, you got to have younger people. If you want a future for your congregation, it's usually couched in terms like, if we don't do this, our congregation will die, as though somehow the life of the congregation depends upon the people rather than upon the presence of Christ. It's really a rather backwards way of looking at the church. Now, they may have been sold a bill of goods saying, well, we've just got to do this to attract young people. The fact of the matter is, young people today, we often talk with Colleen Carroll Campbell. She wrote a book several years ago called The New Faithful. They're not interested in, well, they're interested in one of two things, depending on where they stand. They're either interested in something that doesn't change. Their entire life has been built upon the shifting sand of change. Everything's changed constantly in their life. They go out and they buy an iPhone. It's obsolete the day they buy it. They know that. They know that change is the way of the world. They want something that doesn't change, something that hasn't changed, something that they can grow into rather than out of. And so I just don't accept the premise that this attracts young people, or that if you don't do it, young people won't attend your church. The other thing that young people want, and this is not good, is they want that sense of authenticity, but they've drunk so deeply of postmodernism, they will leap right over your contemporary praise band, and they'll go to the local emergent church where music is not that big of a deal, and where everything's kind of postmodern, relative. They're looking for something authentic. Now, there, they're looking in the wrong place. Here's just a good question to ask. Now, you probably, sad to say, people who oppose this, usually, the game plan goes the same way every time. The pastor or some people in the congregation say, our church is going to die unless we chuck the liturgy and go with contemporary worship. And everyone is afraid and says, well, then we better do that, whether they want it done or not. And no one sits down and says, well, where has this worked? Show me where this works. I can tell you what you will find when you walk into a lot of churches that have abandoned the historic liturgy. Will you find masses of young people? You'll find their parents is what you'll find. You'll find the young people's parents, the baby boomers. You'll find lots of them. I can speak from personal experience that in a congregation where we have not abandoned the historic liturgy, the people who find it most compelling, and I'm not going to speak for the whole congregation, but I will say the people who generally find it most compelling, most valuable, are the young people. Look, if you had been marketed to your entire life and told that nothing remains the same, if you'd lived in this state of constant flux, constant change for the sake of change, where the high priest of the culture is the late Steve Jobs, who changed things just because he could, not always because it was best, and just because he knew he could get you to shell out another $500 for the new old iPad, even though it's not really that new. You'd be looking for something stable, something, not something to grow out of, but something to grow into as a young person in the church, something you could grow old with. So I would question the premise of whether or not this is really what young people want. It's more often what their parents want. Their parents want to be young people again, and the music makes them feel young, and so that's what they go for. But rather than making these kind of pragmatic arguments, say, What about this is Lutheran? If it's a Lutheran congregation, it sounds like it is. What about this is Lutheran? It's not enough that the pastor's Lutheran, that the organist is Lutheran, or even that the author of the song is Lutheran, or that the people playing the praise music are Lutheran. That's not what makes it Lutheran. What about the words here? What about this change from one thing to another makes it more Lutheran? What about this confesses more clearly salvation by grace through faith for Christ's sake alone? Now, those are the hard questions that need to be answered. And any time anything is changed, either going lower on the church scale or higher on the church scale, the question always needs to be asked, is there more Jesus here in this change for sinners or less? Is there more focus upon salvation by grace through faith for Christ's sake or less? Is there more opportunity to receive the sacraments, Christ's body and blood, or less? Is there more opportunity to confess the historic Christian faith, or less? Is there more opportunity to sing and to pray and to stand and confess with the church historic, or less? Now, I'm convinced that if asked those difficult questions, the trend, the kind of tired trend toward let's attract young people by making the music snappier and the liturgy less Lutheran just doesn't hold any water.
You know, good resources. Dr. Barbara Resch has done a lot of research on that, on teenagers and church music. So I'm looking at an article right now in For the Life of the World magazine, Yours, Mine, or Ours, Teenagers' Perceptions of Church Music, which debunks a lot of this stuff that this, you know, praise and worship, contemporary praise and worship music is what all the kids want in the divine service.
Yeah, so. And I will just tell you this as a word of warning. Ask the next question, which is, if the goal here is to attract the young people to the church, what are we going to do with their kids? What are we going to do with their babies and their toddlers and their preschoolers and their first and second graders? And if the answer is, well, you know, that music kind of gets them hyped up like sugar. So we send them to children's church because when they hear the drums and the guitars, they do what children do. They dance around. They kind of go crazy. They're hard to keep. We need them in children's church. You know something's wrong when a worship form requires segregation of the family, which the liturgy doesn't require.
Another good resource for Marcia might be, beginning on Tuesday, March 20th, we're going to begin a weekly series with Pastor Will Whedon on the historic liturgy. So that will be a very helpful resource, I'm sure. And it strikes me, before you throw out the historic liturgy, shouldn't you teach the people why it is we do what we do before you just say, this is what the youth want?
Right. Before you throw something away, make sure you know what it is you're throwing away. In the Wilkin House, I get in trouble a lot for throwing things away without asking. Because Jeff knows,
here
I throw
too.
Things away.
Yeah.
I throw things away without asking, okay?
Except your trash, which does need to be thrown away.
It makes it to the trash can. And before, my wife is constantly telling me, ask me before you throw that away. If something's missing that was there 1 minute and gone the next, she knows who to ask. And why do I sometimes throw things away that I shouldn't be throwing away? Because I don't stop and look and think, what is this for? What might she need it for? Why is it sitting here? And if you throw the liturgy out without knowing what it is you're throwing away, well, you haven't really knowingly made a change for the better. You're just like me, walking around, picking stuff up, tossing it in the trash can with no rhyme or reason. Just because it was there, I didn't think it belonged there. I didn't stop to appreciate what it was. I just threw it in the trash, which happens too often in the church.
Now, if we can just get you from the trash can to the trash dumpster, that's real progress, my friend. Hey, speaking of Pastor Whedon, here's a quick email from Jim. He says, I heard on the program today that Pastor Whedon will be on the air tomorrow. I wonder if he's a bivocational pastor. How much time can he devote to the pastorate, considering his other duties, running his fan website and making appearances on The Big Bang Theory, where he is so nasty to poor young Sheldon? Thanks for the email,
there is
Jim.
I think there's a tongue-in-cheek there. I think there is an actor of Star Trek The Next Generation fame, a Will Wheaton, with a T, who often appears on The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I thought he was saying he looked like one of the characters of Big
Bang.
No.
There's a Will Wheaton who is an occasional guest there and gives Sheldon a hard time. But Jeff wouldn't know anything about this because culturally Jeff is still living in 1971. So he's still thinking Marcia and Greg and Bobby while everyone else is thinking of poor little Sheldon.
That's right, Beaver.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida. Silly with commercials, serious with God.
Howdy, folks. Old Gus here. When I'm not out fixing up something with Country Bob's or picking on my banjo with Matt, I saddle up and head on down the trail till I hit the white sandy beaches of Pensacola, Florida. And on Sunday, you can find me at Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Emmanuel Lutheran Church invites you to divine service every Sunday at 8 and 10:30 a.m. Bible classes for all ages at 9:15.
Stay Lutheran, my friends!
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri, the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California, St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Friday afternoon. We're going through listener email, the Issues Etc. comment line in just a few minutes. Issues Etc. blog of the week.
Here's Marcia. She said, could you post something about Issues Etc.'s reaffiliation with KFUO Radio in St. Louis? We read what Dr. Gene Edward Veith wrote about it, but would like to hear from you all. What does this mean for those of us who have committed to support Issues Etc. since their break with KFUO? Thanks for the email, Marcia.
Well, we actually did put out a press release. When was it, Jeff? Was it Monday that we put out a press release about this? This is something that's been in the works for a year, and I'm not joking, a full year. We've been in conversations with the leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and of KFUO Radio in St. Louis. And, well, at long last, we have been able to sign a contract to buy airtime on KFUO, just as we have been buying airtime on our St. Louis, our present St. Louis affiliate, KSIV Bot Radio Network, 1320 AM. And starting Monday, we will switch St. Louis affiliates from KSIV to KFUO Radio in St. Louis. They are the old home of Issues Etc., but Lutheran Public Radio will remain independent. We're not moving. We're not employed by KFUO. We're still independent, produced by Lutheran Public Radio. Everything goes on. I often tell people who ask about the change for us is, well, the only thing that really is changing for us of real consequence in this is that we're going to be dialing a different number on the ISDN at 305. I have to give credit where credit is due, this has been through some great efforts and patience on the part of both the people who are running KFUO AM and also the leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And What else do we say, Jeff? It doesn't change anything in terms of our employment. Money given to issues, et cetera, still goes to issues, et cetera. Money given to KFUO does not go to issues, et cetera, in any way. Money given to Lutheran Public Radio still goes to Lutheran Public Radio. Donations given to KFUO do not go to Lutheran Public Radio. We are completely independent. It's simply a change of local affiliates.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I think you've pretty much covered all the bases. So, Marcia, when you give to issues, et cetera, it goes to us. And or Lutheran Public Radio goes to Lutheran Public Radio, the producer of Issues, etc., and LutheranPublicRadio.org. So two separate entities, and you know, it's
just as Issues, etc., and Bot Radio Network were two separate entities under our current arrangement with
exactly.
That.
And it's important to know that we are purchasing the airtime, as you said. That we're not getting some you know, sweetheart deal from KFUO. So we have bills to pay, that just like we pay Bot Radio Network now. We did it now because we can get 2 hours in St. Louis instead of 1 hour, which is what we currently had on AM 1320 Bot Radio Network. And it's got a stronger signal. We've got a lot of listeners in Southern Illinois that couldn't listen to our current affiliate AM 1320, but they can pick up AMA 50 KFUO in St. Louis. But again, when, you know, we had this problem here at KFUO, we had a lot of people after we were canceled, like, well, I've been supporting KFUO for years. Well, that money never trickled down into our line item, so to speak. So that's the same thing's going to happen now, that when you support KFUO, you're not supporting Issues, et cetera. When you support Issues, et cetera, you're not supporting KFUO.
Right. It's a simple buying of airtime arrangement, as we've done for years and years and years. Back when we had the national show, we bought airtime all over the country. And that was the extent of our relationship with those affiliates.
This is Herman calling with a model for Issues, etc.'s role and work that I think you would all find appealing. Recalling the well-known science fiction movie, Space Odyssey 2001, the astronaut has to find and clip the critical wires that feed the male violent super intelligent computer HAL, and so is Issues, etc., by the careful questions of Pastor Wilkin and the technical preparation that support it, going forth to clip the wires of the world of lies and the wisdom that is darkened of God in the computerized attempt of today's world and its social media, by means of which things are communicated, and ideas and propositions especially. Hence, no wonder the publisher of Elaine Pagel's new book hesitated to have her exposed to the questions of Issues, etc.'s examination. It might clip her wires. Thanks a lot.
Well, I like the analogy. And Jeff, you can explain what happened there. We try to, whenever we can, get an interview with the principal person there. In this case, it would have been Elaine Pagels, her new book called Revelations on the Book of Revelation. And we make every attempt through their publicists, that's how this works, to get an interview with the principal person. In this case, the publicist said no for whatever reason. And so when they say no, we go to the next best thing, which is we bring on an expert guest to talk about that. In that case, it was Dr. Charles Geeshan. And by the way, you can listen on demand to that interview with Dr. Charles Geeshan. And we took excerpts from an interview, an NPR interview that Elaine Pagels had done just the day before with National Public Radio. And we're able to play them and have Dr. Geeshan respond. You can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. And what day was that? If they're looking, it was
yesterday.
Yesterday. Wow, it doesn't seem like yesterday.
That would be March the 8th.
Okay, March the 8th. If you look there, Dr. Charles Geeshan on the latest book from Elaine Pagels. It's a very interesting, compelling conversation. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to do any of that wire snipping, as the caller mentioned, unless we had guests of the caliber of Dr. Charles Geeshan. He kept everything, and some rather complex questions regarding the Book of Revelation, he kept it all very simple so that even I could understand it. And that's the great strength of Issues, etc., is the caliber of its guests. Whatever the subject may be, we usually have very little trouble finding someone who's able to address it in an intelligent way.